This is Alan Sale of Astral Audio Entertainment, located at www.astralaudio.net, and you're listening to episode 18 of Compensating Controls.
Synaptic Jam Productions presents Compensating Controls, the debut podcast novel from author James Keeling. Warning: parental guidance suggested for some language and mild to extreme scenes of violence. Welcome to the podcast. My name is James Keeling, and as you can tell, I'm not recording in my studio. I've become accustomed to recording here at Panera Bread on Saturday mornings, and I think I'm enjoying it. Well, welcome to the podcast. Episode number, I believe it is 18. A lovely episode wherein much happens. We get the conclusion to the Mall of America chase, and we figure out where we're going to go from here. Maybe.
Chapter 38. Bear felt a vibration begin to rise through the soles of his shoes, quickly followed by a rumbling sound and the scent of diesel exhaust. Before he could squeeze off his shot and take out Mark Number 2, a double-length bus roared directly into his line of sight, obscuring his view. "Damn!" he thought as he ran around the back side of the still-moving bus and sprinted for the LRT platform. "Move!" Nick yelled to Cassandra as he turned and ran for the train car. The doors had already begun closing. Nick desperately stuck out his hand, and the tips of his fingers were temporarily pinched by the closing doors, which silently hissed open again. He and Cassandra ran onto the train and sat, in an uncomfortable plastic seat, staring at the still-open doors. Time seemed to drag on as they watched, the door refusing to close, almost as if waiting for the gunman to arrive to kill them. Finally, the door slowly closed, and the train began pulling away from the station.
Bear! Crap! Bastards got away!
Hawk! How?
Bear, you're not gonna believe it.
Hawk, how, Bear?
Light rail.
Hawk, you've got to be kidding me. Team, report locations, options. Moose, east entrance of Sears, north of main entrance. Police cruise is obstructing. Too far for pursuit. Ferret, stuck in traffic on south side. I'm boxed in. Pursuit impossible.
Bear, still on platform. They're moving too fast to pursue on foot. Shit!
Hawk, all right, damn it.
He paused, examining his options.
Okay, team, regroup rendezvous Charlie. Ferret, swing by for extraction. Moose, copy. Ferret, copy.
Bear, copy.
Hawk resisted the almost overwhelming urge to kick a small child that had crossed his path as he strode angrily from the mall. The special street signals, which had been put in place for the LRT, or light rail transit, dutifully stopped all of the cars on the streets around the southeast corner of the mall, where Killebrew Drive met 24th Avenue, creating quite a gridlock. The train continued to barrel along the tracks until it stopped at the 20th Avenue station, a few blocks from the mall. Nick and Cassandra exited the train and made their way to Cassandra's car. Nick got behind the wheel and they calmly, but quickly, made their getaway. As they sped along I-494 heading east, the adrenaline began to ebb from their respective systems. Nick's hands began to shake while Cassandra felt dizzy enough to feel obliged to grip the dashboard. They stopped behind a grocery store in Invergrove Heights and, while Cassandra went inside to buy medical supplies, Nick once again swapped license plates with an old beater car he had seen when they entered the parking lot.
"You know what?" Nick asked as he entered the apartment. "I'm getting pretty damn tired of getting blood all over my clothes. And you know what else?"
"What?"
Cassandra asked. "My arm hurts like hell," he said through gritted teeth.
Cassandra sat him down at the kitchen table and, opening the medical kit she had purchased, bandaged his arm. The entry hole was actually very small, but the exit wound on the back of the arm was much larger. She wasn't about to try to sew the wound shut, so she used a couple of butterfly bandages and a bunch of regular band-aids to cover the wounds as best she could. She finished off her triage with copious amounts of gauze wrapped around his arm. A first-class field medic, she most definitely was not. She opened her mouth to speak, but no words came out. Silently, she stood. The shock of recent events seemed to cascade over them both, like Niagara Falls, They each retreated to different areas of the small apartment to collect their respective thoughts. Cassandra to the bedroom, and Nick still at the kitchen table. They'd spent the entire time running, trying to get some sort of help, some sort of salvation from others. All it had produced was death, misery, and woe. Everything had gone straight to hell. Nick took stock of his situation, and while it did nothing to cheer him up, it did put the events of the last couple of days into perspective. Like it or not, he was in the middle of the cluster. It was his ass on the line, and it was up to him to do something about it. Time to take the fight to the enemy, he thought. Yes, he would, but how? He began mentally recounting the events leading up to his current predicament. An idea began to form. It took shape in his mind, and slowly all of the pieces came together. Glitch, could you come here for a minute? Cassandra emerged from the bedroom, her eyes red from the tears she had cried. She composed herself and sat down in the chair opposite him. I've got an idea, he said, his eyes serious and intense, his voice calm and confident. Nick spent the next half hour sitting at the small table, detailing his plan to Cassandra, who stopped him only occasionally to ask questions.
Do you really think that'll work?
She asked him incredulously. Nick's lips curved up into a sad yet wry grin. Well, I've already saved the girl. Chapter 39. Pons Matal sat at the plush hotel suite and slowly cleaned his new knife. Correction, his two new knives. His own had been specially made for him and was unique. So he had stopped by a local sporting goods store and picked up a new gutting knife. He also picked up a new hunting knife complete with serrated top edge. He did not like having to use them, but when life gives you lemons. Up until this time, Pons had remained on the street, which is where he traditionally wished to stay while on the job, a rental car his only abode, his cell phone his only office. This had suited him for a very long time now, and he did not see the reason to change. Maybe it made him slightly mentally unstable, but Pons viewed himself as a man without a home, his home being wherever he happened to be at that precise moment. As for a brick-and-mortar home, he didn't have one, and in his estimation, he didn't need one. He often thought this sense of ease assisted him by letting him blend in better to his current surroundings. He was never a tourist. He always belonged. But in this case, he had needed a place to sit, clean his weapons, and construct a more reasonable course of action. He had immediately drove to the first 4-star hotel his cell phone recommended and checked into a palatial suite, complete with a beautiful view of the Minneapolis skyline and a mint on the pillow. He hoped he would not have to sleep there, as he often felt confined when indoors. If he had been honest with himself, he would have admitted to suffering from a slight case of claustrophobia, but he would not, for it would show weakness, and Pons Matal had no weaknesses. So there he sat, his two knives and his 1911 design Colt sitting on a large piece of felt, which he had laid meticulously on the coffee table. Although he hadn't gleaned any useful information from that little man, Scott Sigler, he had been able to relieve some of the frustration that had been building up in him since his last encounter with the esteemed Mr. Edgewood. Their next meeting would be slightly different from the first. He was still somewhat confused as to how such a weakling had been able to get the drop on a professional such as himself. It would not happen again. Pons knew that, by this time, the local authorities would be looking for him as well. Perhaps he should not have killed Mr. Sigler in his usual manner, preferring instead to cover his tracks. But he simply could not resist. He had wanted to test out his new toys, which he was happy to report worked precisely as advertised. Perhaps he should do commercials for them. He chuckled to himself quietly. While it was true that using the same method made him more noticeable, it did develop street cred, which was good. Good as long as you don't get caught. He knew that some assassins liked to remain anonymous and engineer elaborate ways to kill their targets so nobody would even suspect it was anything but an accident. But not him, not Pons Matal. He craved the notoriety, the way an adrenaline junkie craves his next fix. Nobody, not even his own employers, knew his full name, and they never would either. He gave out his last name, but never the first, and that was just the way he liked it. He had enjoyed the work he had done in that garage. This job had become very personal to him, and he was more than just determined to see it through. he was going to see his objectives executed with extreme prejudice. This was the way of things, the order of the world, and he would see the order maintained. His cell phone sat just to the side of the piece of felt, and as he watched, the weapons on the table began to vibrate, making the knives' sharpened edges shimmer and the lights dance across the gunmetal gray finish of the Colt. He picked up the phone and opened it to reveal a text message. "I know where they are. $50,000 for the location. If acceptable, respond to text with yes." Pond stared at the text message for a long moment, while sipping the glass of wine he had poured from the wet bar. He had a slush fund for every job, which never had less than $200,000 contained within. The price was acceptable. He began to type on the diminutive keyboard.
"Agreed. Give me location and I will give dollars."
He clicked on the send button and the text message winked away. It did not take long to get a reply. "No. Dollars first, then location."
"How do I know information is good?"
"It is. $50,000. Deposit it into a PayPal account."
"PayPal account?"
KISSMYASS666@gmail.com.
"Is this joke?"
"No joke. Transfer the money and I will give you the location."
"It will take time."
2 hours, no more. After that, no deal."
"Fine. 2 hours."
Pond set the phone back down on the table and stared at it for a long moment, as if daring it to vibrate again. It did not. He would have to contact his technical friend again. What in Hades was a PayPal account?
And for those of you out there who know what a PayPal account is, that means that, yes, you are one step ahead of Pons Metall. And here's the promo for this episode.
If you're a fan of good horror films, you know the feeling. The one that creeps up from the pit of your stomach. The one that tells you that someone is about to die. Well, this is one of those precious moments. To find out who, you'll have to tune into the 100th episode of The Midnight Spook Show. Live and Undead, October 26th, 2011. At a special start time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. Where? Spookshow.tv/live. That's spookshow.tv/live. Jump into the chat room. If you dare, you won't want to miss it. Otherwise, you can miss.
Tech tips. Still waiting for tech tips from you listeners, so please send me a tech tip. Email it to me, jkeeling@jameskeeling.com. Looking for novice and or advanced tips. Feel free and share the knowledge. All right. Coming up is the month of November. And for those of you who are in the know, that is NaNoWriMo month, which I do tend to participate in. It's a great opportunity for anyone who ever has wanted to be a writer or is a writer to give yourself a goal and get something accomplished. During November, I will hopefully get out one or two episodes of Compensating Controls. But, as should be expected, my primary focus will be the writing of another novel. If you'd care to follow me and my progress during NaNoWriMo, just check my site. There'll be a link there for my NaNoWriMo page and also a word count. So, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, NaNoWriMo goal, 50,000 words. Time period, 1 month. Start time, 1st of November, midnight. And you have to be done by midnight of the 31st. For more information on that, please see NaNoWriMo.org. That's NaNoWriMo.org.
You have been listening to Compensating Controls, the breakout novel by podcast author James Keeling. For more information and more content, please visit the website at www.jameskeeling.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Synaptic Jam, or like me on Facebook, also at Synaptic Jam. Music and sounds generously provided by Incompetech.com and Freesound.org. Compensating Controls is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported license. So please, share it with everyone and spread the word. Just don't change it or make money off it. Or, if you do, please send that money to me. Swiss bank account available upon request.
That's all that I've got for this episode. So, big boy voice time. Once again, this is James Keeling of Synaptic Gem Productions, wishing you clear skies and a crimson sunset.
Stop rushing, Jim. You just started this again. Nick desperately stuck and sat in an uncomfortable plastic and sat in an uncomfortable and see in an uncomfortable
light rail. Light rail. It's just silliness right there. I'm sorry. I just like that. I don't know if it'll be funny when people listen to it. Maybe it's only funny if you actually have that. If you actually understand it. Okay.
Hawk resisted the almost overwhelming urge to kick a small child that had crossed his path as he angrily strode. I think angrily strode. See, me and my big-ass sentences. I gotta learn how to write more concisely. Okay.
Pitch change.
His eyes serious and intent. Serious and intent?
How about intense? There we go.
Who stopped him only...
It is recording. Pop filter in place. There. I'm gonna get rid of hell, because it doesn't make sense.
Now, kitty cat, with you meowing and stuff, I don't know if I'm picking that up. Am I picking that up or not?
You silly little baby girl.
I love you too.
He began to type on the diminutive pad.
And now about 10 seconds of dead space for noise removal.